Chapter 69. Ugly asked to exclude the idea of her being Mira's mother. Anyone who has looked at a face, to try and discern signs of known kinship, in it will understand his process of conjecture, how he tried to think away the fat which had gradually disguised the outlines of youth, and to discern what one may call the elementary expressions of the face. He was sorry to see no absolute negative to his fears. Just as it was conceivable that this Ezra, brought up to trade, might resemble the Scapigrus father in everything but his knowledge and talent, so it was not impossible that this mother might have had a lovelier fine daughter whose type of feature and expression was like Mira's. The eyebrows had a vexatious similarity of line. And who shall decide how far a face may be unmasked, when the uncherishing years have thrust it far onward in the ever-new procession of youth and age? The good humor of the glance remained and shone out in a motherly way at Deronda, as she said, in a mild guttural tone, "How can I serve you, sir?" "I should like to look at the silver clasps in the window," said Deronda. "The larger ones, please, in the corner there." They were not quite easy to get at from the mother's station, and the son, seeing this, called out, "I'll reach 'em, mother, I'll reach 'em," running forward with alacrity, and then handing the clasps to Deronda with the smiling remark, "Mother's too proud. She wants to do everything herself. That's why I called her to wait on you, sir. When there's a particular gentleman customer, sir, I daren't do any other than call her. But I can't let her do herself mischief with stretching." Here Mr. Cohen made way again for his parent, who gave a little guttural amiable laugh, while she looked at Deronda, as much as to say, "This boy will be at his jokes, but you see he's the best son in the world," and evidently the son enjoyed pleasing her, though he also wished to convey an apology to his distinguished customer for not giving him the advantage of his own exclusive attention. Deronda began to examine the clasps, as if he had many points to observe, before he could come to a decision. "They are only 3 guineas, sir," said the mother, encouragingly. "First-rate workmanship, sir, worth twice the money, only I get 'em a bargain from Cologne," said the son, parenthetically, from a distance. Meanwhile, 2 new customers entered, and the repeated call, "Addie," brought from the back of the shop a group that Deronda turned frankly to stare at, feeling sure that the stare would be held complimentary. The group consisted of a black-eyed young woman who carried a black-eyed little one, its head already covered with black curls, and deposited it on the counter, from which station it looked round with even more than the usual intelligence of babies. Also a robust boy of 6 and a younger girl, both with black eyes and black-ringed hair, looking more Semitic than their parents, as the puppy lions show the spots of far-off progenitors. The young woman answering, to die a sort of parakeet in a bright blue dress, with coral necklace and earrings, her hair set up in a huge bush, looked as complacently lively and unrefined as her husband. And by a certain difference from the mother deepened in Deronda the unwelcome impression that the latter was not so utterly common a Jewess as to exclude her being the mother of Mira. While that thought was glancing through his mind, the boy had run forward into the shop with an energetic stamp, and setting himself about 4 feet from Deronda, with his hands in the pockets of his miniature knickerbockers, looked at him with a precocious air of survey. Perhaps it was chiefly with a diplomatic design, to linger and ingratiate himself, that Deronda patted the boy's head, saying, "What is your name, sir?" "Jacob Alexander Cohen," said the small man, with much ease and distinctness. "You are not named after your father, then?" "No, after my grandfather. He sells knives and razors and scissors, my grandfather does," said Jacob, wishing to impress the stranger with that high connection. "He gave me this knife." Here a pocket knife was drawn forth, and the small fingers, both naturally and artificially dark, opened 2 blades and a corkscrew with much quickness. "Is not that a dangerous plaything?" said Deronda, turning to the grandmother. "He'll never hurt himself, bless you," said she, contemplating her grandson with placid rapture. Have you got a knife? Says Jacob, coming closer. His small voice was hoarse in its glibness, as if it belonged to an aged commercial soul, fatigued with bargaining through many generations. Yes. Do you want to see it? Said Deronda, taking a small penknife from his waistcoat pocket. Jacob seized it immediately, and retreated a little, holding the two knives in his palms, and bending over them in meditative comparison. By this time the other clients were gone, and the whole family had gathered to the spot, centering their attention on the marvelous Jacob. The father, mother, and grandmother behind the counter, with baby held staggering thereon, and the little girl in front leaning at her brother's elbow to assist him in looking at the knives. Mine's the best, said Jacob, at last, returning Deronda's knife, as if he had been entertaining the idea of exchange, and had rejected it. Father and mother laughed aloud with delight. Why, you won't find Jacob choosing the worst, said Mr. Cohen, winking, with much confidence in the customer's admiration. Deronda, looking at the grandmother, who had only an inward silent laugh, said, are these the only grandchildren you have? All. This is my only son, she answered in a communicative tone, Deronda's glance and manner as usual conveying the impression of sympathetic interest which on this occasion answered his purpose well. It seemed to come naturally enough that he should say, and you have no daughter? There was an instantaneous change in the mother's face. Her lips closed more firmly, she looked down, swept her hands outward on the counter, and finally turned her back on Deronda, to examine some Indian handkerchiefs that hung in pawn behind her. Her son gave a significant glance, set up his shoulders an instant, and just put his fingers to his lips, then said quickly, I think you're a first-rate gentleman in the city, sir, if I may be allowed to guess. No, said Deronda, with a preoccupied air, I have nothing to do with the city. That's a bad job. I thought you might be the young principal of a first-rate firm, said Mr. Cohen, wishing to make amends for the check on his customer's natural desire to know more of him and his. But you understand silver work, I see. A little, said Deronda, taking up the clasps a moment and laying them down again. That unwelcome bit of circumstantial evidence had made his mind busy with a plan which was certainly more like acting than anything he had been aware of in his own conduct before. But the bare possibility that more knowledge might nullify the evidence now overpowered the inclination to rest in uncertainty. To tell you the truth, he went on, my errand is not so much to buy as to borrow. I dare say you go into rather heavy transactions occasionally. Well, sir, I've accommodated gentlemen of distinction, I'm proud to say it. I wouldn't exchange my business with any in the world. There's none more honorable, nor more charitable, nor more necessary for all classes, from the good lady who wants a little of the ready for the baker, to a gentleman like yourself, sir, who may want it for amusement. I like my business, I like my street, and I like my shop. I wouldn't have it a door further down. And I wouldn't be without a pawn shop, sir, to be the Lord Mayor. It puts you in connection with the world at large. I say it's like the government revenue, it embraces the brass as well as the gold of the country. And a man who doesn't get money, sir, can't accommodate. Now, what can I do for you, sir? If an amiable self-satisfaction is the mark of earthly bliss, Solomon in all his glory was a pitiable mortal compared with Mr. Cohen, clearly one of those persons who, being in excellent spirits about themselves, are willing to cheer strangers by letting them know it. While he was delivering himself with lively rapidity, he took the baby from his wife and holding it on his arm, presented his features to be explored by its small fists. Deronda, not in a cheerful mood, was rashly pronouncing this Ezra Cohen to be the most unpoetic Jew he had ever met with in books or life. His phraseology was as little as possible like that of the Old Testament. And no shadow of a suffering race distinguished his vulgarity of soul from that of a prosperous, pink and white huckster of the purest English lineage. It is naturally a Christian feeling that a Jew ought not to be conceited. However, this was no reason for not persevering in his project, and he answered at once in adventurous ignorance of technicalities, "I have a fine diamond ring to offer as security, not with me at this moment, unfortunately, for I am not in the habit of wearing it. But I will come again this evening and bring it with me. £50 at once would be a convenience to me." "Well, you know, this evening is the Sabbath, young gentleman," said Cohen, "and I go to the shul. The shop will be closed. But accommodation is a work of charity. If you can't get here before, and are anyways pressed, why, I'll look at your diamond. You're perhaps from the West End, a longish drive?" "Yes, and your Sabbath begins early at this season. I could be here by 5, will that do?" Deronda had not been without hope that by asking to come on a Friday evening he might get a better opportunity of observing points in the family character, and might even be able to put some decisive question. Cohen assented. But here the marvelous Jacob, whose physique supported a precocity that would have shattered a Gentile of his years, showed that he had been listening with much comprehension by saying, "You are coming again. Have you got any more knives at home?" "I think I have one," said Deronda, smiling down at him. "Has it 2 blades and a hook, and a white handle like that?" said Jacob, pointing to the waistcoat pocket. "I dare say it has. Do you like a corkscrew?" said Jacob, exhibiting that article in his own knife again, and looking up with serious inquiry. "Yes," said Deronda, experimentally. "Bring your knife, then, and we'll swap," said Jacob, returning the knife to his pocket, and stamping about with the sense that he had concluded a good transaction. The grandmother had now recovered her usual manners, and the whole family watched Deronda radiantly when he caressingly lifted the little girl, to whom he had not hitherto given attention, and seating her on the counter, asked for her name also. She looked at him in silence, and put her fingers to her gold earrings, which he did not seem to have noticed. "Adelaide Rebecca is her name," said her mother, proudly. "Speak to the gentleman, Lovey." "Shlavm shabs fiagon," said Adelaide Rebecca. "Her Sabbath frock, she means," said the father, in explanation. "She'll have her Sabbath frock on this evening. And will you let me see you in it, Adelaide?" said Deronda, with that gentle intonation which came very easily to him. "Say yes, Lovey, yes, if you please, sir," said her mother, enchanted with this handsome young gentleman, who appreciated remarkable children. "And will you give me a kiss this evening?" said Deronda with a hand on each of her little brown shoulders. Adelaide Rebecca, her miniature crinoline and monumental features corresponded with the combination of her names, immediately put up her lips to pay the kiss in advance, whereupon her father, rising in still more glowing satisfaction with the general meritoriousness of his circumstances, and with the stranger who was an admiring witness, said cordially, "You see, there's somebody will be disappointed if you don't come this evening, sir. You won't mind sitting down in our family place and waiting a bit for me if I'm not in when you come, sir? I'll stretch a point to accommodate a gent of your sort. Bring the diamond, and I'll see what I can do for you." Deronda thus left the most favorable impression behind him as a preparation for more easy intercourse. But for his own part, those amenities had been carried on under the heaviest spirits. If these were really Mira's relatives, he could not imagine that even her fervid filial piety could give the reunion with them any sweetness beyond such as could be found in the strict fulfillment of a painful duty. What did this vaunting brother need? And with the most favorable supposition about the hypothetic mother, Deronda shrank from the image of a first meeting between her and Mira, and still more from the idea of Mira's domestication with this family. He took refuge in disbelief. To find an Ezra Cohen, when the name was running in your head, was no more extraordinary than to find a Josiah Smith under like circumstances. And as to the coincidence about the daughter, it would probably turn out to be a difference. If, however, further knowledge confirmed the more undesirable conclusion, what would be wise expediency? To try and determine the best consequences by concealment, or to brave other consequences for the sake of that openness which is the sweet fresh air of our moral life. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.